When I was starting to put this sermon together, I was thinking about Yom Kippur, the Jewish Day of Atonement, the day that says to you, whatever happened this year, well, it's done now. The other shoe is dropped, it's over. And sometimes that's an amazing relief. Good or bad, it's done, and we're ready to start the next year. Life goes on. And like our reading said, the story still goes on. The story is still evolving. And as I was looking for Yom Kippur readings, I came across the meme, the internet blurb. It had a picture of Marilyn Monroe. Fancy, fun lettering, and it said, if you can't handle me at my worst, you don't deserve me at my best. And I'd heard that before. My little siblings use it. They are 18 and 16. They think it's cute. The 18-year-old has a t-shirt with it on it. I said, I don't like you at either time, so we're all good. And the meme is cute, for a given value of cute for an 18-year-old girl or boy. But it isn't really true, and it isn't really healthy once you start to think about it. But it is really a part of our culture, this idea. And I've seen it most in younger people. That somehow, if you can't hang in there with them, while they are acting like the most terrible human on the planet, you're not worth it when they're dressed up looking nice and ready to go out and be amazing. It isn't that younger people are worse, they just get exposed to this a little more harshly because of the internet. So I went looking for this whole quote. I'm selfish, impatient, and insecure. I make mistakes. I am out of control. And at times, hard to handle. But if you can't handle me at my worst, you sure, and there were a few expletives in there, don't deserve me at my best. And it's a fake quote. It has popped up in the last 10 years or so. I was able to find, in a very little amount of looking, somebody wearing it as a tattoo. 6 different t-shirts, including one in rhinestones. And yes, oh, the internet memes with lipstick and Marilyn Monroe pictures. And it's completely wrong in almost every sense, and yet some people take it as some kind of pop culture profundity. And Yom Kippur is a good time to talk about words like deserve. What we deserve from one another. What we are owed as human beings. What we owe others. So let's talk a little about that. And let's talk about forgiveness and atonement. Because it's all blended into one big idea. We have 7 principles as an association. They're not like the 10 commandments. You don't come in the door and get told, well, if you don't obey these, you're out. Go be a Baptist. We don't do that. We have them painted on the beams so that you can remember them if you need a quick reference. And I admit it, I need to look up some weeks. Inherent worth and dignity. Everybody has some kind of value just because they're human. You're not born in original sin. You're born worth something. Justice, equity, and compassion between humans. You deserve to be treated with decency. We teach small children this in kindergarten. Acceptance of one another. Encouragement to spiritual growth. Look beyond yourself. Encourage the guy next to you to look beyond themselves. a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Democracy. Everybody gets a voice. Everybody can be heard at the table. Peace, liberty, and justice for the whole world. Nobody gets left out of the process. And a realization that we're all connected in some kind of web. This is what we as an association say that we deserve from one another. But in talking to friends over the years, this is great on a philosophical level. These sound amazing. But what does that mean when you're talking about interpersonal relationships? Where does it get you? These are pretty large. What do we actually owe other people, and what do they owe us? What do these things mean when put into practice? I have watched a friend who lives in Phoenix over the past 8 years deal with a child who is off the edge of inappropriate behavior. He is adopted. He is of a different race than his parents. He has mental health issues, addiction issues. He has battered and beaten them. He has stolen from them. He has threatened the lives of his three younger sisters to the point where they had to live in different states to protect his younger siblings. And I tell this story with my friend's permission. And she asked a particularly painful question of me months ago. She said, "If I were a Unitarian, what am I supposed to do? He tried to kill his little sister who has Down syndrome. He battered his other little sister who has Down syndrome. He stole his grandmother's pain medicine. I hate him. And I can't take any more, and I wish we were all dead." And she came from a fundamentalist background. And she has no way to cope with what is happening in her life. She said, "What do you do with someone who is so poisonous, so toxic, and who doesn't want to change?" He's happy. He's told them he's happy. What do you do? Dr. Travis Bradbury, he wrote a book called Emotional Intelligence 2.0, and he thought about this. He said, "Toxic people defy logic. Some are blissfully unaware of the negative impact they have on those around them. Others derive satisfaction from creating chaos, pushing other people's buttons. Either way, they create unnecessary complexity, strife, and worst of all, stress. And studies have long shown that stress has a lasting negative impact on the brain. Even a few days cause the effectiveness of neurons in the hippocampus, the area that handles your reasoning and your memory. Weeks of stress can cause reversible damage to dendrites, the arms of brain cells that let them communicate with one another. Months of stress can destroy neurons. When stress gets out of control, your brain and your performance suffer. The Department of Biological and Clinical Psychology at Friedrich Schiller University in Germany is looking right now at what happens with stress and negative emotion, the same kind of emotion you get when dealing with toxicity in your life, what kind of damage it caused on subjects' stress response and their brains. And they found that whether it's negativity, cruelty, or just plain out of control wildness, toxic people drive your brain into a stressed out state that you really should wish to avoid at all cost. But in this country, that's not what we get told. I don't know how many of you remember in 1969, Tammy Wynette, release, stand by your man. No matter what happened, stand by a toxic person. Well, because he needs you, that's why. It doesn't matter. In 1964, Shel Silverstein wrote a children's book called The Giving Tree. I think most of us may have read that one. We've read it to our kids or had it read to them. Children meet a tree that gives to a child until nothing is left. It's reduced to nothing, a dying stump. While the child took and took and took and took without thought or remorse, and in fact, only came back when they wanted to take more, demanding more each time they came to see the tree. Tammy Wynette's toxic friend would have loved that tree. Hundreds of other cultural and religious stories and songs and movies reinforce the idea that in order to be a good person, you have to keep giving no matter what, that you owe it to your fellow human, your family, your partner, your child, your neighbor, to give until not only it hurts, but possibly kills you because you somehow owe it to them. You get told culturally that in order to deserve the good, you have to tolerate the bad. Do you? Well, yes and no. I'm not talking today about standing by someone that you love that is trying to do their best. All of us know someone who, because of mental illness, addiction, personal issues, job situation, just can't seem to win. And they're trying. They're trying their hardest. They want to succeed in life. They want to love the people around them. They want to be loved. We're not talking about those folks. We're not talking about someone who is trying to help themselves or who has no idea of how to help themselves, but they want to learn. They may screw up 1,000 times, but they come back to you and say, "Oh my God, I'm sorry. I didn't know how to do this right. Please help me again." Okay, we're not talking about them. They're not the person the meme is talking about either. For those folks, of course you work to stand by them, to help them. That's life as a decent human being. We're talking about something different. We're talking about the idea that we are owed people tolerating our worst behavior in order to somehow deserve us at our best. We're talking about you feeling like you have to tolerate terrible behavior from someone in order to be part of the good in their life. And the answer to that is no. Really, no. No one owes me or you tolerance of your deliberate terrible behavior. And no, you don't have to tolerate deliberate terrible behavior on the part of others. Judaism says that to save one life saves the universe. But it recognizes that that life may be yours. It says that you must never destroy yourself to save another, because you are both equally important in the eyes of whatever divine there is. Writer Veronica, and I hate this last name, Tugaleev, says something provocative when she writes, "One particularly harmful idea carried by our cultural narrative is that you need to find someone who will love you." And when I read that, I thought, wait a minute, what is she talking about? Humans need love, but where she's going is interesting. She said, imagine if we believed this about any other basic need, food, water, oxygen. If you needed another person to provide you with those, you'd be considered dependent, if not disabled. Yet we so willingly put ourselves in this state with love. So she's not talking about falling in love with somebody. She's talking about feeling like loving yourself isn't enough to prove that you're lovable. And she goes on in the book that she wrote to develop the idea that we've been told that loving ourselves isn't good enough. We have to make someone else love us too. That it's their love that proves that we're lovable, as if our own word isn't enough. Every one of us has days or times when we are not at our best. I get angry, I get tired, I may yell or sulk. Lord knows I curse. I'm not perfect, no one is. But it is not anyone else's job to tolerate me or you or anyone. If we allow those worst impulses and emotions to free reign, the people around you are not called to tolerate or encourage your worst. That is not a validation of your worth and your dignity. I am called, you are called to surround yourself with people who want, who make you want to be your best, with people who call from you all of the very best you have to offer yourself and the world. And if your friends, if the people around you don't make you want to be a better person, to live more fully into your values, if your love doesn't make you want to be a better person, to make the world a better place for you and everyone you know, then something has gone a little awry. You are not called to tolerate the worst from someone in order to somehow deserve the tiny moments of good that they do have. You are called to never enable someone to be their worst self. You are called to bring forth all of the good, all of the positive, all of the amazing in the people around you. And you deserve their best, and they deserve yours, because you are human and alive together. That's all you have to do to deserve someone's best. When we offer someone our worst, we do owe them something, but it's not our best as some kind of booby prize. Our best isn't enough. When we have behaved badly, what we owe someone is atonement instead. It's not enough to say, I was terrible, therefore you get to see me when I'm wonderful. You're not that wonderful. I'm not that wonderful. When we've screwed up, we've dug a hole and we have to fill in the hole before we can build anything. Atonement isn't for the victim. You're not paying something off. It's for you. It's for the perpetrator. It's to get you out of the hole that you have dug and put you back on level ground. Atonement is that idea of Yom Kippur, of the other shoe dropping, of it taking you back to a neutral position. It doesn't matter if the other person forgives you, because it's not about them. You're doing this because you need to get out of the hole, not because they need to say, well done. Atonement removes the damage that you have done to your own personhood. It doesn't fix the damage you've done to somebody else. And when they atone, it doesn't fix the damage that they have done to you. Doesn't make it go away. Only time and hard work can do that. And that's back to that idea of willingness to do the hard work. So as a friend or a partner or a congregant, if you can't handle me at my worst, you still deserve my best every day. And if I can't give it to you, you deserve to be able to walk away as a friend, as a partner, as a family member from that unhealthy relationship without shame or guilt. And the giving tree is a story that's meant to be sweet. But in the end, the tree is a destroyed and dead stump. After the boy took everything it had and came back to destroy it with an axe for his own good. All he cared about was more. He never cared that the tree just wanted to be with him. And the boy became an old man, still unhappy, still unsatisfied, still not full, still alone and still taking. Because it's still who he was. All the tree had done was destroy itself. Don't be the boy, and don't be the tree. Surround yourself with people who make you want to be a better person, with people who call out and bring forth your best, with people who love you into new ways of being, with people who are willing to say to you, I won't tolerate that. I love you more than that. I won't tolerate that. How do I help you? Call out and support the best in others. Love yourself enough to know you never, ever deserve someone's worst, especially not in order to deserve some kind of good relationship. You don't owe anyone your life, your joy, the wood of you. No one gets to take an axe to your tree. No one's company is worth your soul. Love people into a new state of being, but love yourself just the same. You are so worth it. Amen.